Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
And a very warm welcome back to Solidarity Breakfast.
A left response to the major developments in capitalism.
What they trade in is not wheat. They trade in famine.
A little dose of revolutionary optimism.
I think it's really important to sort of express solidarity globally.
It really is a deal by corporations for corporations.
The union forever defending our rights. Down with the black leg.
If you think the ABC's left wing, don't listen to this program.
Solidarity Breakfast, 7:30 to 9 a.m. Saturdays, 3CR, 8:55 a.m. Streaming and 3CR digital, podcast or audio on demand. And of course, the website, solidaritybreakfast.org.au.
Solidarity forever!
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie and Tobias.
Yeah, good morning.
Yes, actually, it's a wild and woolly day out there. The tram driver that I, because I didn't ride today because it was...
Too cold.
Oh, but it's not just that. It's violently windy out there. Mm. And the tram drivers are shaking in their boots. Apparently, this is a bit of news, hot goss from the tram driver. It's been 3 days in a row that they've been on red alert because of the wind. It has this unprecedented level of destruction for tram drivers. They actually have to get out and get branches off the tracks. If you listen to the Concrete Gang tomorrow, you will discover that a full report on the a crane that fell over because of the wind, which was nobody was killed, luckily enough, because it hung for 10 minutes before it did the complete fall. So everybody was able to scurry away. Frightening stuff, but wind can kill you. When I was in the bush, windy days were the days that you really worried about because anything could get you, say, indoors.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, there's been, even just this last month, there's been a lot of deaths on work sites, especially the one that especially hit me was... an employee fell through a stair void, like an empty hole. And if we're talking what the cost of a life is here, it's $10,000 and 100 hours of community work for providing an unsafe workplace where an employee was killed.
Every time you say something like that, I just gulp. It's just horrendous. You know, it's a bit like that last year there was, and this is not... it's been popping up in the reports from America, in workplaces in America. But last year in a warehouse here in Melbourne, a young fella was killed by a AI-operated machine because it mistook him for a box.
Yeah, I know. And these companies, you know, this one's called Big Bass Baser Construction, will have no conviction record against them.
Well, there you go. Exciting stuff. Actually, it's interesting. We weren't going to start off with this, but the AI stuff is interesting because of the Talkfest last week and this promotional activity that's going on in big corporate land and governments, that AI is going to be the new industrial revolution and that it's going to be very good for productivity. But interestingly enough, they never delineate numbers around what the productivity increases will be at all and what they're going to be coming from. Just interestingly enough, there was a Facebook fine for coming out of this is about the data. This is about the reason for why big corporations want open slather on collecting everybody's data without any repercussions. But interestingly enough, they recently, €1.2 billion fine for Facebook as a result of EDBP binding decision. It came out on the 22nd of May. a Facebook service by the Irish Data Protection Authority. They were fined €1.2 billion. This fine, which is the largest GDPR fine ever, was imposed for Meta's transfer of personal data to the US on the basis of standard contractual clauses since the 16th of July 2020. Furthermore, Meta has been ordered to bring its data transfer into compliance with GDPR. What they've been doing is collecting major data from every Facebook user in Europe and transferring it to America without any and they've got laws that tell them that they're not allowed to do it.
I mean, that's what I've been reading about. Some of this stuff is there's this company called Swissport that operates in the airports that the TWU is taking issue with here. That's the Transport Workers Union, because they want to, they are planning to, Swissport is planning to engage software and hardware that records staff, ground staff as they work. And this comes off the back of the work from home sector under the specific company was called SafeTrack, and they got busted for non-consensually installing surveillance software on people that were working from home.
Oh, that's unbelievable. What about the... Well, you see, the reason why I brought this up is before I came here, in my email, it's got this thing from Microsoft telling me that there's a new... And everybody else who uses Microsoft stuff, which is, you know, probably practically everybody, who, except the man that's running around near Bright after Desi. Desi's yeah. not going to be using it. But anyway, your contact, this is what you're supposed to consent to, because usually people just be told, do you consent? But, of course, you don't read all the fine print. It says here, when you share your content with other people, you understand that they may be able to, on a worldwide basis, use, save, record, reproduce, broadcast, transmit, share and display your content for the purpose that you made your content available on the services without compensating you. If you do not want others to have that ability, do not use the services to share your content, which is the whole point of the service, right? You represent and warrant that for the duration of these terms, you have and will have all the rights necessary for your content that is uploaded. Retention of your content will not violate any law or right of others. Microsoft does not own, control, verify, pay for, endorse, or otherwise assume any liability for your content. Now, they're covering their back, but it does mean that they'll be able to collect your data and use it, not get fined like they were in the EU. Yeah.
And, I mean, look, there's a million reasons not to use Microsoft, chief among them the fact that they're hosting cloud space for the IDF and supporting an active genocide. But also, there are great alternatives like Proton Mail that offer almost all the same services, and you just need to migrate over, and they offer encrypted services. So let this be an unsolicited advert.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Proton Mail, and for everyone to have their data locked down, because it's an all-out assault from all fronts. Like, a particular chilling episode for me this week that's aided... a depressive spiral, apart from watching the robotic dog videos, which are insane, that technology that they're developing. I mean, they should just all burn
So we don't need dogs.
Just burn it all.
Oh, we don't need a dog. We
no,
just
because they're going to go monitor unsafe.
Oh, right.
They're sending them in. They're sending them in to do all the work that people do in factories. So they'll be fitted with, or they are still at this moment, they are now being fitted with, optics that can see dial gauges from in toxic situations and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, to me, one of the most even scarier than that was that the ADF, the Australian Defence Force, is boasting, and Channel 7 is happily to spout this propaganda, that they have signed up 7,000 young people in the cohort of 17 to 24, spending $170 million on targeted ad campaigns via TikTok and video games like Call of Duty and Fortnite. Richard Miles said that this cohort will be as willing, and I'm quoting now, as willing and desiring of serving the nation as previous generations. This is as the war drive gears up to sign up 69,000 people by early 2030. That's what they're setting as their target. And kids are the ones that are being targeted. That is chilling to me.
Yes, it is chilling. Which actually leads to one of the items that we were going to talk about, which is all expenses paid trip to Gold Coast for local councillors paid by Zionist Lobby for how to support, well, it's a sort of a pro-genocide affair, really. It's it's not just mainly Sydney councillors that have taken the offer up. Robert Samuels from Willoughby, Sydney, Mayor Darcy Byrne from the Leichhardt Council in Sydney, Councillor Ryan Morris from Wollongong, Ted Lapkin has already reached our sites from the City of Ballarat. Ted Lapkin, he's a councillor there, is a Director of Public Affairs for the Zionist Federation of Australia and has worked as a ministerial advisor to the Federal Coalition and Labor, right?
So well, they're getting an all-expenses-paid junket to the Gold Coast.
Yeah, yeah. Now, listen to this. Councillor Raphael Camilo from the City of Melbourne is there. So it's not just a range of places from Sydney. The City of Sydney is sending Zan Maxwell, Sarah Swan from Mulara Council, and even Will Nemish from Waverley Council, which is a reasonably progressive place. So mayors and councillors attending the Combat Anti-Semitism Movements Conference on the Gold Coast in early September, the Australian Mayors Summit Against Anti-Semitism, CAM Summit will lobby for the widespread adoption of the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism and support for Israel, including bans on promoting boycott, divestment and sanctions of Israel. However, hundreds of letters have been sent to local councillors around Australia calling on them not to attend the summit. Local councillors first heard of the summit earlier this year when they received letters and texts from the Israel-US-based CAM movement inviting them to an all-expenses-paid National Mayors Summit to the Gold Coast in early September. David Gronsky and Gillian Siegel heads Israel lobby at the Gold Coast Summit. For those who did not respond, there was a follow-up letter signed by CAM's CEO, Sasha Reutemann, who is based in Tel Aviv and previously headed a 25-strong Israeli Defence Force, IDF, team responsible for the IDF's digital media strategy.
Yeah, so if you go on YouTube and you look up Nick Hanna, he's got a podcast called The What and the Why. He's a Sydney criminal lawyer. He's doing excellent journalism at the moment. He has a video discussing this whole situation, and also a friend of the show who will hear at the tail end of the show, Ahmed Alabadla from Pulse of Palestine from our sister radio station Skid Row, will talk about it as well. But they're also all hosting a panel discussion tomorrow, which I encourage you all up. I think they have a webinar link. If not, they will be having a video available afterwards. A panel discussion with investigative journalists Yaakov Aron and Wendy Bacon as well, discussing how this American company, Combat Anti-Semitism Movement, is funding, with under the auspices of Gillian Siegel, this mayoral summit. This as the...
Bad actors.
Well, the bewildering news that Iran, the Iranian embassy has been revoked here in Canberra. And he's the diplomat's been sent home, sent packing. This while Russia has evacuated its embassies in Tel Aviv, US has reportedly abandoned two bases in Iraq, and Australia has made the unprecedented call to declare a foreign military as a terrorist group, which is incredible. I mean,
well, they're covering their backs, aren't they? I mean, it's this business about saying we're the good guys and they're the bad guys. However, blurring the lines, very difficult to work out who the good and baddie is in here.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if you...
Immoral behaviour is immoral behaviour.
Regardless of personal opinions, let's say, the picture looks a bit different when you see it from the Russian perspective or the Iranian perspective. I'm not saying that either of those countries are beacons of hope and prosperity, but there are 900 bases, American bases, encircling that part of the world.
You know, it's actually a bit of a reminder that it's a bit like the pub. I mean, I know it sounds like a left-handed thing to say, but it's a bit like the public housing debate. They wouldn't be knocking down these towers if they were on the outskirts of the western suburbs, right? Probably, or you know, if they were in, if they weren't on such prized land. So, are you going to have a war in a country that's not going to give you something that you want?
Yeah, and what is this war costing? I mean, figures came out recently about the reported death toll in Ukraine, and you're talking about World War One levels of
destruction and annihilation.
Over 1 million people dead, 250,000 refugees in neighbouring countries. It's devastating. And
well, it's like Frankie Gugus Goes to Hollywood says, what war? What's it good for?
Yeah. And while we hear this, we'll shout out Vivian Langford, who's recorded the next few pieces. I've pieced together a bit of a sampler of the best. No, it's not fair. The best and the brightest. They're all really good up there. But Vivian's provided us with a recording of last week's rally, and we'll go.
And of course, that was the national rally.
The national rally, yeah. And we shout out always Vivian Langford for her incredible work and for her work on the Climate Action Show, 5 p.m. on Mondays on 3CR, 5:30. We'll hear from Grace Tame.
No, you're right. Five.
Five. Okay. Yeah. And we'll hear from a whole bunch of people from Sydney and how staunch they were up there.
One of the amazing things about what's happened in the last few weeks is not just that the numbers of people coming out are bigger than ever, but we have now hundreds and hundreds of organisations who have thrown their weight on the scales. Some of them have supported the movement for 2 years. Many have come on more recently. We welcome that immensely. And one of the sections of society that is mobilising now in much bigger numbers, in a more determined way, is the union movement in this country. That is a wonderful thing. And we salute all of the union members out there who have been lobbying and campaigning within their unions for their unions to take a stronger stand and to mobilise. But one of those unions who has put out some very great statements and is standing with us today is the New South Wales Teachers Federation. And so we welcome up the president of the New South Wales Teachers Federation, Henry Rajendra, to speak to us today.
Thank you very much, Uncle Chris, for the acknowledgement of country, and I too pay my respects to elders past and present and any Aboriginal friends and comrades with us here today. My name is Henry Rajendra, and I'm proudly the president of the mighty New South Wales Teachers Federation. On behalf of the tens of thousands of public school and TAFE teacher members of the New South Wales Teachers Federation, I offer warm greetings of peace and solidarity to you all. I also want to call out the unions here today, the incredible union movement, workers of New South Wales, standing together behind the banner of Unions for Peace, led by Unions New South Wales President Lauren Hutchins and Secretary Mark Morey. Give them a big round of applause. Police is union business. We share with you the deep sorrow we all feel at the genocide, starvation and now famine inflicted on the people of Gaza. The genocide, the starvation and famine we witness every minute of the day via news broadcasts. As a teacher union, I assure you, our members educate for peace, not war. In 1947, former president of our union, Sam Lewis, attended the second conference of the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, we know it as UNESCO, in Mexico City. Not long after President Sam returned from that conference in Mexico, UNESCO declared that all wars are fought against children. Sam ensured that this concept was embedded into the political psyche of the New South Wales Teachers Federation. I want you to know about a unanimous decision carried recently by the executive of the New South Wales Teachers Federation regarding the genocide and starvation in Gaza. It paid part it states. The New South Wales Teachers Federation stands resolute in its urgent and active support for the children, teachers and broader population of Gaza and all Palestinian people under occupation who are enduring unconscionable pain, suffering, starvation and bombardment. It goes on to say the Federation emphatically restates its commitment to the Australian Council of Trade Union statement on Gaza and strongly supports the call for the Albanese government to impose immediate sanctions on Israel and join with nations across the globe in recognising the state of Palestine at the United Nations. Further, we resolve to work with the union movement in New South Wales and across Australia, as well as civil society and community groups and government, to achieve peace and justice for the Palestinian people and a political and diplomatic settlement consistent with the United Nations resolutions. We educate for peace, not war. All wars are fought against children. Peace is union business. In solidarity, thank you.
Sanctions that will cripple Israel and turn it into a pariah state. that does not exist to serve the will of the mass of people, but exists instead to serve those in power, those with money and power, those who want to see a world of continued oppression and exploitation, those who are part of a rotten military in alliance with the United States, with Donald Trump, those who are determined to spend, those who want to spend billions of dollars on weapons and war machines to prepare for even more wars and conflicts in the future, rather than spend it on public housing, on wage rises for public servants, on the things that we need in this country. Let alone lifting a finger to stop this genocide in Gaza, and that's what we've seen for the last 2 years. This is a movement, as we've said from the beginning, of people power against the establishment in this country. And that's why we're going to have to keep fighting like never before, because it's not enough just to win a majority of people over. We need to build a movement that can force change out of the hands of those in power.
Oh!
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
And you're back with Annie and Tobiah on Solidarity Breakfast this Saturday morning on your 3CR community radio station.
Yeah, and I mean, remember that tomorrow there is a rally.
It starts early, 11.
It starts early at 11, yeah, because there is a countering the so-called March for Australia that's happening, which is infested with Nazis, much like the United Patriots Front movement was almost 10 years ago now.
And it's at the State Library, so you're in the same place, but it's slightly earlier. And on the line, we've got Kath Rouse. She's from No Northern Incinerator. See, I can't even say it. I find it so vile, Kath. I can't even say it. How are you this morning?
Oh, I'm pretty good. But, yeah, we all, for me, there's so much important stuff happening. And this is part of that, you know, call for justice. Putting this huge incinerator in Melbourne's north, in these emerging suburbs, it's just a complete social justice issue as well as environmental issue. It's
interesting because this week you've been getting a really lot of coverage from the legacy media, and it was and it's because there was an announcement made in Parliament, and it was led by the Legalised Cannabis Party. Tell us, yes. Even though you guys have been working your socks off for a very long time, this is how the mainstream media's minds work.
Yeah, it is. So they're good media people leading up to the debate, you know, organised, you know, articles in The Guardian, 734, ABCY, all of those things. But some of it was in relation to that. Some of it was in relation to the government, you know, in the last couple of weeks announced this huge cap of burning 2.5 million tonne of rubbish. And then the industry have been doing a big marketing job as well. So it's both. So then, you know, we've been called to be the other voice, you know, to what they call the Waste Association, but it's the marketing industry for these marketing industries for these incinerators. So they get whole shows to themselves as if they're in for the good, but they're the private enterprise.
Okay. And they're greenwashing, aren't they? They're greenwashing. They're using this notion of waste to energy.
Yeah, yeah. Like, at the same time, directly from the BBC, there's one of the new incinerators in the UK, new incinerator, and locals had been complaining about all the emissions. They were saying, oh, no, it's not right. And they were saying, oh, nothing to see here. They found it's only 6 years old. In the last 2 years, it had 900 breaches of emissions that had happened 18 months ago and they never disclosed.
Okay, and so what are those emissions?
Oh, look, I can't tell you all of... There's some people there who can tell you all of the names of the chemicals and stuff, but I don't want to say them because I think I'll get those wrong at this time on a Saturday morning.
So what you're saying is that what we've got is a chemical cocktail, and and they're expecting that this will be okay, even though it's 5 kilometres from primary schools, childcare and disability services and domestic dwellings.
We've got 59 schools within 10 kilometres. It's on the doorstep. So that is why, I guess, leading to that. So the news came out about this one in the UK, you know, doing such an appalling job, a new incinerator. We went, the that other media people read, you know, had lots of stories, and we went to Parliament, led by the Legalised Cannabis Party, and then they put forward an inquiry into, they put forward a motion requiring the Economy and Infrastructure Committee to inquire into the development and expansion of these waste-to-energy incinerators, including its suitability plans and policies, including proximity to residential communities. And they were just asked to make a few adjustments, and it got through. Labor supported the inquiry.
Well, yeah, that's because...
into the waste-to-energy.
Which is interesting because it's a chess game, isn't it? Because even though the Greens have been putting forward cogent arguments about they're requiring a committee into this, an inquiry into it, it took the Legalised Cannabis Party to force the issue.
Yeah, and they amended it. They took out all the words toxic, I think. The wording that passed wasn't the same as the wording we started with, but to get that passed was really a great achievement.
Yeah, right. And actually, Kath, I think the public would be, and I am really amazed, that they were going to allow this kind of technology, which has got a bad track record, to go ahead without an investigation.
Oh. Well, yes. Yes. I mean, these have all closed down in California. There is not one operating in California. They're not allowed in Sydney. They're banned in the whole of the ACT. And yet we were going, you know, they're looking now. What the bad news was the Cleanaway announced, not the government, Cleanaway announced the caps that they were allocated. So we were looking at, say, roughly 10 million tonne of rubbish burnt over the life of the project, which is 380,000 a year.
Which is not, it's industrial, residential and demolition waste.
Yeah, mixed.
That's pretty broad. Does that mean it's asbestos?
Yeah, who knows what they're going to put into that mix.
Asbestos, nappies, how much e-waste goes in at the same time, risk of... everything, PFAS, every raincoat, all the Kathmandu, all of that stuff, all goes in together and creates a cocktail. But this is the thing. That was their plant. We spent 18 months fighting that one. In a swift turnaround announced by Cleanaway, the government doubled the cap for that Cleanaway were permitted to do. So we've gone from 380,000 to 760,000 tonne a year of that mixed waste. So it's the doubling of it overnight, announced by Cleanaway, not announced by Recycle. Afterwards, it was announced by Recycle Victoria. So the MPs, everyone found out about it through the corporations. So the whole timing of these announcements have been dictated by the corporations. They've said it themselves.
Wow, it's amazing. So you've got a public meeting, haven't you? You've got a public meeting tomorrow.
That's exactly why we have a public meeting tomorrow. And really, this is a very important one because, look, our social media has been going through the roof as well as, you know, attracting a lot more media attention. The word's getting out. And we've got the company, you know, flying letterboxes with their own disinformation. So... tomorrow at 1 p.m, Sunday the 31st of August, 1 p.m. at the Whittlesea Great Hall, we're gathering, No Northern Incinerator Will Lurk, a gathering with some other community groups, like-minded community groups. Guess what? 3CR will have a stall there as well. 3CR are going to have a table because they've been great supporters and we really appreciate 3CR support through this. Like with a lot of media, 3CR was there, you know, before those other ones came and went. So we really appreciate the truth telling of 3CR and the, you know, the time that you've given. So we're all going to be there at the Great Hall, Whittlesea Council offices.
25 Ferris Boulevard, South Morang, it is?
That's right.
And it's FERRES Boulevard, you probably more. And it's 1 p.m. and it's going to go to 2:30. And more strength to your arm, Kath.
Yeah. So anybody who can come, we need everybody who's in the north able to come. I know there's a lot happening on Sunday. This is for, you know, this is a different one, standing up for social justice. And if you can't come, can you please ask somebody else? So anybody in Melbourne's north. This affects Northcote too. You know, it affects all of Melbourne.
Yeah, the wind. Everybody should be aware that the wind... We've been experiencing a huge amount of wind. These people who make these decisions are not the ones on the ground who are going to be affected and breathing the air. Good on you. Thanks very much for coming and talking to us.
No, thank you very much. We really appreciate your time and all the work you do.
Thanks, mate.
Things that you tell
you too. Thank you. Thank you for your work. Bye.
Thank you.
This is a rapacious expansion of privatisation, which is going to change the face of the city that we live in.
It's not share. It's not making the housing crisis go away. It's really about the big end of town. It's a shame job.
It's a transfer. It's a theft of public wealth, which is going to worsen the housing crisis.
The government is giving public land to private developers. Why would you do that? Why would you give all these assets over to the biggest bully in town?
We're looking down to a future that we don't know what's going to happen. Where are we going to get moved to? Dandenong? Or away from our communities and away from the services that we need.
This is a line in the sand for not only the public housing tenants, but for a Victorian society.
3CR, here to stay.
You're back with Annie and Tobias on Solidarity Breakfast.
Oh, you never left, and you heard that amazing interview with Kath Rouse about the incinerator in Wollert, which is absolutely...
Well, no northern incinerator,
Right. No northern incinerator. And this is something that everyone should be concerned about because it exists as this intersection of all the struggles.
Yeah. No, it's like a failure of governance. They're just to repeat that their community meeting is on Sunday the 31st at 1 p.m. It goes till 2:30 p.m. It's going to be at the Whittlesea Council offices, 25 Ferris Boulevard, South Morang. Very important for people to involve themselves, especially the people in the north. We've just played our Save Public Housing rally. Speech is now going to be the next item. Kaz is a disability voice, somebody who tried to commit death by suicide because of the lack of safe, secure housing. So this is a trigger warning. If, as she says, if you find this a bit confronting, then go off and make yourself a cup of tea. The Victorian government wants to knock down the 44 public housing towers and hand over the property to private developers. Why is public housing so important? So this is one of the reasons for why it's important as part of the public Save Public Housing rally on August the 2nd.
I am a chronically disabled and mentally ill young woman who has been trying to find a place to truly call home for the past decade and a half. I want you all to know that my talk comes with a big trigger warning for mention of suicide attempt, medical trauma, hospital injuries and ongoing disability, but no explicit mention of how the attempt was made. Please take care of yourselves and feel free to step away for a little while. I would like to begin by acknowledging the true owners of the land on which we are meeting, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and pay my deep respects to their elders past and present. I would also like to acknowledge that I am a white settler woman living on and benefiting from Aboriginal land, and I would also really love to take this opportunity to pay my deepest respects to the people of the Gundudjabara Nation, in particular the Peak Wurrung people, who are the true owners of the land on which I had the great privilege to grow up, in a beautiful place called Warrnambool in southwest Victoria. I tried to kill someone. That is how I have ended up in front of all of you fine folks today. That is the long and the short of it. I attempted to snuff out a human life. The twist in the tail, the kick in the teeth is, of course, that the life I tried to take was my own. In late December of 2022, after being forced to move back in with my mother by the ongoing, worsening and deepening housing crisis, I tried to kill myself. Shame. Shame, yeah. As a result of this, if it wasn't already obvious to you all, I now have an acquired brain injury. I have spasticity in all of my limbs. I use a motorized wheelchair, this bad boy right here. I have extreme tremors in my hands, and I can barely lift my arms, although I can still do a solidarity fist when wanted. All of this pain and suffering could have been avoided if only I had just believed that I deserved to be housed. If I hadn't bought into the idea that, on average, it takes 10 years for a so-called normal person to access public housing. Since I was in my mid-teens, I believed in this half-truth. And of course, the public and so-called community housing waiting list has since blown out to around 15 years for a low-income person. Shame. I need assistance to feed, wash, and toilet myself. For about a year, I could barely speak in an intelligible fashion. I've been told that I will never again speak in what I think of as my voice. For many, many years, ever since I was a young teen, all I wanted was a place of my own to call home. I tried to die by suicide because I could not access affordable housing that was safe for me. Shame. This, apart from just being a decent fucking human being, is just part of why I'm so deeply concerned about State Labor's plans to demolish and privatise our state's 44 public housing towers. This is an alarming thing to do in the middle of a housing and homelessness crisis. This plan will displace more than 10,000 people, break up communities, and move vulnerable Victorians away from the health and social services that they so desperately need. As part of the plan, across Melbourne, 6,660 public homes are going to be destroyed. There is no public housing guaranteed on this land into the future. Shame. I apologise for not having more up-to-date statistics for you, but overall homelessness increased by 24% in Victoria in the years from 2016 to 2021, more than five times the national average of 5% across Australia. Shame. In 2021, close to 15% of homeless people were aged under 12 years. That's 15% of our homeless people who are just kids, not even teenagers, just children. And around 54% of people facing homelessness in 2021 were young people aged under 34. Shame. On a cold day in Nam, I'm thinking of them. As a young person who tried to end my life because I simply could not access safe, stable, and affordable housing, I'm thinking very strongly of them. Housing is the first step, I believe, to advancement. If you've got a roof over your head, you can go out and look for a job, but the house comes first. And one last thing, today, as some of you may have noticed, I'm wearing my Dorothy slippers. This is because I'm hoping to be able to click my heels together and say, there's no place like home, and finally get home. Thank you all.
Capitalism's inherent barbarism is on full display, from the genocide in Gaza and the rise of the far right, to growing militarism and the climate crisis.
We need to radically change the way society is organised.
Join us for the upcoming Eco-Socialism 2025 conference, Eco-Socialism, Not Barbarism, held on September 5th to the 7th at the Balam Balam Place in Brunswick.
We will be bringing together activists from across the Indo-Pacific, sharing experiences to resist capitalism's drive to barbarism and build the mass movements that we need.
Anyone who wants to be part of the discussion on how we can build a left-wing alternative is welcome to attend.
Featuring international guests from the United States, Pakistan, India, Malaysia, and Brazil, along with local campaigners.
Organised by Green Left and Socialist Alliance. Find out more by going to ecosocialism.org.au.
Green Left is a 3CR supporter.
CR Community Radio, giving voice to the community since 1976.
So thanks very much for talking to me today, Lisa. You're from Ocean. Can you explain to my listeners about your organisation first?
Ocean stands for Otway Coastal Environment Action Network, and it's basically a group that started off in Apollo Bay. It's probably where we have our strongest following, and we've been fighting seismic blasting and the industrialisation of the Otway Basin. But the organisation has grown quite a bit now since we've been campaigning along the west coast of Victoria. And so, yeah, now we have supporters, I'd say, from Ocean Grove through to Portland, and quite a few followers in Melbourne and Geelong.
And you had a couple of wins, didn't you?
We had one big win. That was Schlumberger, who proposed the largest seismic blasting, 3D seismic blasting proposal in world history. Originally, the proposal went almost from King Island to Kangaroo Island. It was a massive amount. It was so inappropriate. And we fought that for a good 2 years and got the size of the project decreased. And in the end, they got so much public pushback, and NOPSEMA, the regulator, got so much pushback from the people, the coastal communities, that, Schlumberger withdrew the proposal. So that was a massive win for us, because that would have definitely gone ahead if there hadn't have been public pressure on that.
I was reading something the other day that saying that there is actually a gas field near the 12 Apostles. Is that correct?
Oh, look, there is. There is currently a gas field in the Otway Basin that is providing gas to Victoria and for export, because we do have an excess of gas at the moment, and it is sort of getting pumped north and then exported. But, yeah, there's a couple of processing plants. The biggest one, I guess, is over the back of Port Campbell there. But at the moment, you can stand on the 12 Apostles and you can actually see a massive gas platform just out on the horizon as you look out. So it's
interesting, because there's been so much pushback from particular groups of people about the unsightly nature of wind farms, but they don't mind having a gas platform being the backdrop to one of the major tourist attractions in Victoria.
And no, I totally agree with you. I don't get it. Why aren't those people on board now helping us with this campaign to stop what the state government want to do?
I'd like you to give my listeners some understanding of what is at stake when it comes to seismic blasting. Why is it a technology that is actually anathema to the safety of the oceans and the life forms in it?
There's every chance that apart from the impacts of global warming and, of course, the impacts of if there was a spill while they're drilling, that it is possibly the most harmful part of gas exploration and production is the actually looking for it. To seismic blast, they have a large survey ship and it has an area that it wants to survey and find out what resources are deep below the surface, down to 20 kilometres. And this ship drives along this area in like a grid fashion, letting off 250 decibels every 4 to 10 seconds, 24 hours a day, often for months on end. And the 250 decibels is really hard to explain. It's no longer a sound, like you wouldn't hear it with the human ear. It's an explosion. And it definitely kills, damages marine life, and then it just disorientates them. So it affects their feeding, their breeding, and the migrations, of course. When they do this seismic blasting, it lets the blast off the stern of the ship, and then it tows a 10-kilometre wires with receivers. That's how long it takes these sound waves to go 20 kilometres below the surface and back up. And these receivers collect the data of what resources there may be below. As they approach that area that they want to survey, seismic blast, they say they start off doing it slow and quiet and then build up the noise to scare the fish away or scare the whales away or the seals or the dolphins or whatever. But that displaces them. But there's so many critters can't move as fast as a survey ship doing 5 knots. Yeah, they say that there are efforts being made to lessen the impact on our marine life, but there's only so much you can do when you're letting off blasts like that. We know that each blast, they kill krill for 1.2 kilometres from every blast.
Yeah, so what you're really saying is that the entire food chain is at risk when they do this sort of thing.
Totally. And so that's why I said at the start, there's every chance that this is possibly the most damaging part to that local area, apart from the risk of a spill or obviously the impacts of on climate change from producing gas, which is so potent to climate change.
Now, this explains why many of your the supporters all along the coastline, the Western District coastline, have included commercial fisher people as well as environmentalists, as well as the local indigenous peoples. It goes right across the gamut, doesn't it? The support that against these types of permits that the Victorian government's going for.
It does, I think, because even though most of the time it's been going on for decades, Annie, but it's always been out of sight, out of mind. It's probably only the last 5 or 10 years that it was the local cray fishermen here in Apollo Bay. They had one area that was just wiped out of not only crayfish, all bycatch, all the sorts of things they might pull up in their cray pots, like a few leather jackets or, you know, some cockles or things like that, because of the seismic blasting. And that's really what sort of alerted me to it going on and really what kicked off Ocean in the first place. And I think, so look, the campaign has been pretty successful. Madeleine King, the resources minister, you know, now when she releases offshore titles, is requesting no seismic blasting. You've got to use existing data that you've already got. So we are making an impact, but of course, we want to stop it entirely.
So the Victorian government has opened up public consultation for a further release of possible gas exploration within state waters. And this is why you've set up a cry that we'll fight them on the beaches. So can you tell my listeners what this is about?
So the Victorian government owns from the beach, like the shoreline, out to 5 kilometres, and then beyond that is federal waters. So normally our battles have been with the federal government over these large gas exploration sites, but the Victorian government has said that they have had requests, I'm guessing it's from the fossil fuel industry, to release a title in Gippsland and in the Otway Basin. The one in the Otway Basin is 54 square kilometres and it goes from the shoreline out to the 5 kilometre line. At the Bay of Islands, which is just a magnificent piece of coastland. It's just Port Campbell and Peterborough. To me, it's more beautiful than the 12 Apostles, you know, these large limestone cliffs, and it's just so beautiful and so unspoiled that it just seems ridiculous that they would want to release that. And they've said that they would like seismic blasting minimised. Any seismic blasting in that depth of water will be absolutely catastrophic for marine life. The other site that they want to release is 199 square kilometres over in Gippsland, and it's right near Woodside, the town of Woodside, and between Woodside and Seaspray along the coast there. And a lot of that is on land, across the beach, and a bit out in the sea.
Oh, wow.
The details they've given are very scant. I don't know what sort of consultation, you know, they're asking for, because how can we comment when we don't really know what you intend to do, especially over there in Gippsland where it's on land? Like, what have they got in mind? And also the porthole where the public are allowed to comment, it's taken for granted that the tenders will go ahead and they will go out for tender. Basically says, what can we do to minimise the impact of these projects on you or on the community? Yeah, well, to me, that's not consultation if they've already, you know, taken that stance.
Recently, there was a media release around the fact that 20 rural towns are no longer going to be given access to gas because it's too expensive. They're all going to become electrified, okay? This is interesting because it appears that the local market will not be benefiting from any further gas exploration off our coasts or on our land.
Yeah, look, the Victorian government, as far as I'm concerned, this is a betrayal of us and it's a betrayal of themselves. They've been doing a brilliant job the last few years getting Victorians away from gas. Gas usage is lower than it was at the moment since 1980. By 2027, all new homes will be fully electric. Landlords will have to provide insulated homes with efficient heating and cooling. It just begs the question, why are they doing this? It feels like a betrayal. So, yeah, I think we have an export problem, really, and that's what's keeping the price up. Because we're exporting. We need to nip this one in the bud, Annie, because if these tenders go out and get approved, then we're fighting seismic blasting. Then we're fighting fossil fuel companies, which is a different kettle of fish altogether. And so we need to inundate them with submissions. We really do. And it's not an arduous task. Yes, you can do a big, long submission, and Ocean has produced a submission guide if you'd like to do one. But there's also just a questionnaire or a survey, and you can respond to the questions as briefly or as much as you like. But we want them to hear loud and clear from the Victorian people, this is really dumb what you're doing.
The deadline is the 9th of September. And
it is.
And people can get onto your website, ocean.org.au, and they can find out more about how to do exactly that, right?
Yeah, and if they have any queries, by all means, send us an email and jump on our mailing list.
Okay, thanks very much for talking to me.
Thank you, Annie. Brilliant.
Want to know what happened at the 2024 People's Blockade of the World's Largest Coal Port?
Come along to a special 3CR screening of Turning the Ship, the short film that explains all, and be inspired to join the blockade this year.
Revisit the epic event and hear how this incredible people-powered protestival came together.
Join us on Friday, 19th September at Evil Thoughts in East Brunswick.
Head to Rising Tide Victoria Insta or Facebook page to RSVP and to get all the details.
Rising Tide Victoria is a 3CR supporter.
We're back with Annie and Tobias on Solidarity Breakfast, and we were just listening to Lisa Tabella from the Ocean Otway Coastal Environmental Action Group. No wonder they call it Ocean. Yeah, yeah. Their job is to alert us to how we can defend the ocean from this scurrilous move by governments and fossil fuel, well, fossil fuel lobbyists to continue this rape and pillage of the oceans for a substance that we no longer need.
Yeah, it was like you were saying before about the Exxon CEO.
Yeah. Yeah, he had the audacity to say in an interview that the fossil fuel industry isn't responsible for the destruction of the climate. It's the users' fault because they didn't put up enough fuss.
It's the whole scam about carbon footprints, yeah? Like,
yeah,
Who's got the biggest carbon footprint, you reckon? Exxon or me and you?
Yeah. Anyway, you had a word with Ahmed Abdallah.
Yeah, Ahmed Abdallah from Pulse of Palestine, from, like we were saying, at the head of the program, from Sydney's sister radio Skid Row. We had a quick chat, one that we will be continuing. Ahmed, if you don't know, also runs the Sydney Palestine Justice Movement, which offers a series of webinars that you can find on YouTube, as well as sign up to the mailing list and keep in contact with the incredible assortment of intellectuals, journalists, advocacy bodies that he speaks to really expand your understanding, because the more information you have, the better analysis you can make, the better you can understand what it is that we're actually up against. So we'll listen to him now.
It's a new paradigm that we need to develop. It is beyond the two states or the maintenance of the current regime in Israel. We need to move beyond that. As I usually say, look, forget about the genocide, right? Forget about the killing of children and innocent civilians and the destruction of hospitals, schools and infrastructure in Gaza. Forget about the famine. Forget about the babies being targeted in the chest, in the brain, and in the testicles and so on and so forth. Forget about all that. I mean, when the world looks at this current Israeli society, you know, seeing those soldiers videoing themselves killing babies in incubators, when they see that 96% of the society is saying that what the IDF is doing in Gaza is either sufficient or not enough violence. So when the world sees this kind of society, forget about the genocide, like I say, are we happy to kind of sustain that kind of society moving into the future? Let that society thrive? Let that regime that enabled and indoctrinated and produced the society thrive? I think that's what we need to be focusing on, rather than recognizing Palestine. We need to recognize what the world has created over the past 7 decades or so.
Yeah, we need to recognize Israel for what it really is.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, the original sin that we need to recognize, you know, the Nakba, and even before the Nakba, the first Intifada in 1936 of the Palestinians revolting against the British that enabled the mass migration of Zionists into Palestine. And so all these things that are important to recognize before recognizing this perfunctory statement that everyone is gearing up to provide next month, there needs to be accountability. And I'm glad that, you know, some legal infrastructure somewhere in the world is doing that. You know, the Hend Rajab Foundation is actually looking after all these, you know, soldiers who are enrolling in Gaza, committing a genocide, videoing themselves as they go, and that's how they find out about them. So the barbarism, the level of barbarity with those soldiers, they themselves are actually revealing themselves for those legal institutions. It's just mind-boggling to think how many of those soldiers, how many videos they put on social media, on TikTok, proudly filming themselves committing all these atrocities against babies and children in Gaza. And so absolutely there needs to be accountability, not only for the Palestinians, because if the world allows this to happen to the Palestinians in the hands of this genocidal state, then every single state around the world will be emboldened to do the same, because there's no accountability. Everyone can do whatever they want in this you know, lawless world. So in order to prevent anything like this from happening generally in around the world, we need to achieve accountability. We need to prosecute all these people accused of genocide. We need to enforce the ICC arrest warrants against the war criminals, Netanyahu and his former defense minister, Yoav Gallant. I mean, absolutely, all these news corps and the Murdoch media and mainstream media, they're all gradually realizing that what's unfolding in Gaza is beyond the act of genocide. They all agree with that. They all are implicitly in agreement. And therefore, now they're trying to, you know, report some of what's happening in Gaza. You know, all these reporters filmed being massacred and the paramedics following that in a double tap kind of incident. So the news media, they feel that they need to report on that. However, they maintain their stance in support of Zionism and the Zionist regime in Israel, and therefore they continue to support their narrative by hosting their own mouthpieces, you know, in terms of hosting politicians or reporters who are biased heavily to the Zionist narrative. So we are seeing some reporting in the mainstream media about the atrocities and the genocidal campaign in Gaza, but not to the extent that we say we should be comforted with that. It is a continual mouthpiece for the genocide, for the Zionist regime, and eventually, just like what happened in previous genocidal campaigns around the world, the media news outlets will be held accountable one day. Whether that day is soon or later, they will be held accountable, and they probably will be prosecuted for supporting the genocide. Now, what we do in the pro-Palestine solidarity movement, I think we're doing a great work. Now, the impact of what we're doing is very slow, but we are up against a mountain of, you know, accumulated years of indoctrination in the public opinion psyche and in the mainstream media as well. You know, the Zionist lobby and the Israel lobby here in Australia is showing its strength and power, but it's also showing its weakness, you know, the way they're addressing public freedom speech, academic freedom, and so on and so forth. The more furious and the more outrageous they become in the laws that they try and push on our federal government and state government, they will have tremendous consequences because they're no longer sensical. Centering anti-Semitism, for example, as opposed to racist sentiments against First Nations here, is just outright ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And I borrow the words of Professor Peter Slezak in saying anti-Semitism is absolutely negligible here in this country, but there are those mouthpieces and those elements in our government, unfortunately Zionist elements, that are pushing for that narrative, spreading fear and intimidation, not only in the Australian society, but it's also in the Jewish community. You know, they are being the victim of these Zionist elements in our government. And so whatever we do to push our narrative, whatever we do to combat these decades of indoctrination, I think we're doing a great work in terms of educating the public. Alternative media is the way to go right now. Mainstream media is losing its credibility, not only on Palestine. You know, when it comes to discussing prices of housing, for example, or how the Labour government is behaving or is faring, not many people in the Australian society actually trust mainstream media, let alone the attitude on Palestine. So there's a huge shift in that area because people do not trust mainstream media, because people can see through the atrocities, the genocide, the famine, the killing of babies and children. They can see through all that. But what we need to do as the pro-Palestine movement is to go into those spaces, hold webinars, hold panels, hold educational systems, speak one-on-one to community members, not necessarily politicians. I think personally, lobbying politicians for a change is a losing battle, is a very, very losing battle, because the level of economic benefit and, you know, social benefit that those politicians are getting out of supporting Israel is tremendous, and it's hard to change overnight.
I mean, it makes me think of the Australian Mayoral Summit that's being held in the Gold Coast. It's being supported by the Combat Anti-Semitism from the States. They're giving people an all-expenses-paid trip junket to the Gold Coast to listen to Zionists on how to combat anti-Semitism in their communities. So, I mean, yeah, we definitely don't have that sort of resources. So we have to approach it from a very different perspective. But what do you make of this institutional co-option, you know, like with Gillian Siegel being made the special envoy and her report being absolutely ludicrous? Not only that, this, like the recent government's decision to oust the Iranian embassy is ridiculous. I mean, satire doesn't really even pale to reality at this point. What do you make of these sorts of institutional cowardice or...
Absolutely, it is institutional cowardice. It's just outrageous to appoint someone like Gillian Siegel as an envoy for anti-Semitism in Australia, especially because she is the major member or element that is trying to push for conflation of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. Anti-Zionism being, you know, criticizing Israel as a state, as a foreign state. We are not allowed to criticize a foreign state that she actually used to be on the board of the Australian-Israel Commerce Chamber. So all these connections that Gillian Siegel as a person has with the state of Israel, with Zionism, is just, it's unbelievable. It's mind-boggling that she ends up being the nominee for such a position to combat anti-Semitism. And so pretty much the world is her oyster in that case. She can do whatever she wants to push for a certain definition of anti-Semitism that penalized criticism of Israel, penalized criticism of Zionism as an ideology, conflation Zionism with Judaism, which is a whole thing that we can get into. But it's that engagement that is outright shameful for our government, really, to be appointing such a person. You know, you mentioned that summit that's happening in Queensland. She's in the leadership of that summit, and it's absolutely shameful.
Yeah, well, I mean, in her report, she proposed producing a report card to keep universities accountable to their anti-Semitic pledges. She recommended, amongst other things, to personally audit as the envoy media and make sure that it was suitable to be broadcast.
It's absolutely crazy. And then one should really ask themselves, I mean, why now? Why now? Why isn't this definition, or why isn't this envoy appointed 5 years ago or 6 years ago? Why now? It is precisely because the country that we're trying to criticize, that we're trying to cut ties with, that we're trying to push the government to sanction, is currently engaged in an act of genocide. And so it is precisely now, because Gillian Siegel is trying to give a free hand to this genocidal state to continue doing whatever it wants to the Palestinians without being criticized.
Yeah, absolutely. And to take it back, if we just take a time machine really quickly, if we take a look at what the situation in Gaza was pre-October 7th, just to get an idea of the type of life that Palestinians were living in Gaza before October 7th.
That's a very good question. I don't know how long you have, but there's a lot to be said in that space. You know, you mentioned that Gaza has been under siege for 17 years. I would argue it's been under siege for longer than that. I mean, even before Oslo Accords were signed in 1993, Gaza has always been separated you know, the Palestinians in Gaza have always been separated from the Palestinians in the West Bank. You know, Gaza was part of, before 1967, Gaza was part of Egypt, and West Bank was part of Jordan. I grew up in Gaza, and, you know, it's a funny thing that not many people know about, but my accent is actually different from the Palestinian from Jenin, for example, because they have more of a Jordanian accent, and I have more of a Palestinian accent when I speak Arabic. So it's funny how that separation has been entrenched in the Palestinian society. We have Palestinians in Gaza, Palestinians in East Jerusalem, Palestinians in the West Bank, Palestinians in the diaspora, and Palestinians in 1948. We have Palestinians in the refugee camps. So there's so many groups that they've divided us into. And that's why it has been very, very difficult to kind of unite under one narrative. And that's why within the Palestinian community, within all these groups, you have different varying opinions as to what the resolution should be, you know, two states, one state, and so on and so forth. So this is a long answer, but for Gazans, you know, building from the 90s after the First Intifada and the signing of Oslo, Gaza has always been under that separation, isolation situation away from the outside world. And it certainly became more effective, that siege, after Hamas won the election in 2006, beyond which Israel decided to unilaterally withdraw its settlement, because back then settlements were still present in Gaza, sort of just like what we see in the West Bank right now, you know, checkpoints separating or dividing the strip into four different sections and so on and so forth. The settlements were aligned along the coast. I grew up in Gaza and unable to swim because I was not allowed to go to the beach to learn how to swim and so on and so forth. So the besiegement in Gaza, the sanctions on the Hamas government in Gaza, you know, alongside the collaboration of the Palestinian Authority with, you know, with the CIA, with the Israelis to orchestrate that coup that happened in 2006, which Hamas eventually managed to successfully prevent the PA from taking over Gaza, led to the entrenchment of that siege and the suffering of the Palestinians. Palestinians are unable to move freely across the border. The only border is allowed for personnel is the Rafah border. There are other entrances, Kerem Abu Salem, Erez, and others. They're allowed for goods. Israel, before October the 7th, and for 17 years, has put Gaza on a diet, put the population in Gaza on a diet, controlling the amount of calories that go in and out. There's certain types of chocolate that are not allowed to go into Gaza for children to enjoy. There's a certain amount of, you know, fruits and vegetables are only allowed in Gaza. And so that restricting the freedom of movement, you know, restricting the number of calories going into Gaza, you know, every now and then going in and bomb, you know, certain areas, residential areas, and mowing the lawn, as they call it, you know, all these things, they just accumulate in the psyche of the Palestinian who was born in Gaza, grew up in Gaza, and they eventually lead to this rebellion that we witnessed in 2023 in October. As I said, in October the 8th, 2023, October the 7th was inevitable. If you keep blowing into that balloon, eventually it will blow up in your face, because, you know, more and more pressure on the Palestinians in Gaza, especially when you look at the, you know, geostrategic transformations that are happening around Gaza at the time, directly led, you know, the resistance to take that decision and you know, infiltrate and break the siege the way they did in October 7th. As Reverend Stephen Sizer, when I interviewed him, he said two-state solution is too late, you know, but because of the actions of the Israeli government in the West Bank and in Gaza. And one-state solution is too soon. We have a genocide being committed right now. It's hard to bring two people together in one state. And so the main goal right now is to end the genocide.
Listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.